Hello and welcome to the debate on Press TV. I'm your host, Behruz Necefi. Now, fighting has escalated around the besieged port city of Hodeida. The city used to receive 80% of humanitarian aid for the impoverished country. Yemen is suffering from what the UN calls the worst humanitarian crisis in half a century. Late last month, Washington called for a cessation of hostilities and settling the issue at a negotiating table in 30 days. However, Hodeida is now under full blockade and battle has intensified against Houthi fighters there. Who is responsible for this? What is the U.S. and its allies seeking in the war on Yemen? Is there a solution out there? To begin with, let's cross over to Sana and get an update from Press TV's Mohammed Al-Attab on the latest situation in the port city of Hodeida. Mohammed, over to you.
Yes, the current confrontations which are taking place in Al-Hudaydah is escalating very closely to the densely populated areas, but according to the army spokesperson, he revealed that the invading forces have faced a strong retaliatory operations and also resistance, and that they have already cut off the supply lines for invading forces from Al-Faza, Al-Jah. So the invading forces do not have a chance to enter the city in the face of the strong resistance, and also their supply lines could not hold their place because of the retaliatory operations, and also the latest missile attack that have hit big gathering of invading forces, and also despite of these retaliatory operations, the civilians continue to be killed, especially in the eastern side of the province of Al-Hudaydah, where Saudi airstrikes continue to hit these areas. Also, the mill towers, which have been targeted by Saudi Arabia over the 48 hours, this have also deprived Yemenis from the only remaining storage of food, especially for cereals. The United Nations condemned such attacks on food storages, especially for the cereals. Also, the attacks on the supply line, which as the Hodeida itself is considered as the only remaining entry point for the supply of humanitarian aid. Also, the Yemeni parliament has held a live conference with the European delegation, or the European parliamentarians, who are calling for peace. The Yemeni parliamentarians called on the European Union and also to another international community to pressure the Saudi Arabia to stop its offensive and war that has already claimed the lives of over 15,000 Yemenis.
Okay.
And also their European counterparts expressed that they will exert their utmost to stop the arms sales to Saudi Arabia.
Okay, that was Mohammed Al-Attab, our correspondent in Sana'a, the Yemeni's capital, updating us on the latest. Let me now introduce the people who will be joining me to discuss this issue today. We'll have Editor-in-Chief with the International Interest, Sami Hamdi from London, and political analyst Marwa Osman, who is joining us from Beirut. Thank you both for joining us now. Let me begin with Sami Hamdi. On June 5th, 2018, the U.S. warned United Arab Emirates against an assault on the port city of Hodeida. Why has Washington failed to stop the attack 5 months after its warning?
I think first and foremost we have to remember that James Mattis' statement was a bit strange, in the sense that it's true that it is a turnaround for the U.S., which has given support for Saudi Arabia, implied support for Saudi Arabia's involvement in Yemen. But it's also worth noting that his answer on Yemen came in a Q&A and not necessarily in the actual speech, which led some people to question whether this was the U.S.'s official position. In any event, I think what encouraged the Saudis to do so was this very call from James Mattis that in 30 days they had to meet in Sweden. The Saudis now believe that there is a timeline, that there is a clock ticking, and they want to gain as much territory as possible to put themselves in the best negotiating position possible when they are forced to the negotiating table. It's also worth remembering that the UN envoy said it's unrealistic that they will be able to meet in 30 days. But if the, as to your question, why are the Saudis ignoring the US's warning? Why are they attacking Hodeidah? The Saudis and the UAE realize that the tide is starting to turn against them, that international support is starting to dissipate with regards to their involvement in Yemen. And now it's about, between them and the Houthis, who can keep as much territory as possible that would stand them in excellent stead in the negotiating tables to come. The Houthis' primarily objective is to keep Sana'a and preferably Hodeidah, but mainly Sana'a, because it means they can dictate stronger terms in how the future government would look like. And the Saudis want to force Houthis out of Sana'a in order to weaken their position and to empower the other political parties who are fighting against Houthi, so that a future government would look at least a bit more balanced than the government that Houthis are looking for.
Now let's go to Beirut, to Marwa Osman. On June 14th, 2018, 11 days after Washington's warning to the UAE over a battle for Port of Hodeidah, Pentagon spokesman Major General Adrian Galloway said that the United States is providing intelligence sharing and refueling for Hodeidah to the Saudi-led coalition. Now, how come the U.S. is asking for a ceasefire at the same time it's actively taking part in the war on the poor Arab country?
Well, we have to look at the timing of the announcements that were made last week, earlier last week, which was a couple of days before the elections in the U.S., congressional elections in the U.S. That was a huge deal back then. Everything that was being said was put in the frame of benefiting the elections, exactly like what we saw with the pictures of the late Yemeni martyr, the young girl, the 7-year-old Amal. If you remember, the New York Post having her as a cover photo, that was actually also part of their, if you will, political maneuvering to gain more support against Donald Trump in the favor of Democrats for the elections. Because if you look closer, just up until the days of the election, everything disappeared concerning Yemen from American politics or American TVs or newspapers for that matter. But if we want to talk about Hodeidah or what it means or the stop of the war, I think it has to do more with the also pressure that's coming from international human rights organizations, whether NGOs or UN-linked institutions for that matter, despite the fact that they have absolutely done nothing over the past 4 years. But they have been issuing reports that they didn't move a muscle in the Western powers to stop selling arms to Saudi Arabia. I mean, hundreds of billions of dollars have been sold in weaponry, have been sold to Saudi Arabia, including illegal, internationally banned weaponry that was used against the people of Yemen. And no one still cared up until lately, when the pressure also increased with these international humanitarian or human rights institutions, as I told you. Added to that, that the fact that literally for the past 4 years, Saudi Arabia, along with the United Arab Emirates and the mercenaries that they have been paying to allegedly fight in Yemen, have been losing the war. Look at what happened in the northern part of Yemen, where Ansarullah have actually regained territory inside of Saudi land, which was, according to history, actually Yemeni land, but they regained this territory. They have been maybe going further and advancing on that front line. And in Hodeidah, just yesterday, they cut them through three different routes in Mocha and Khoukha, and also in the northern part of the coastal Hodeidah city as well. So the fight is still very heavy. This afternoon there was more than 30 airstrikes just near the 22 May Hospital and the number 50 Street as well in Hodeidah. They were reported scores of civilians also dead there. So as I do agree with Mr. Sami when he said that they are trying their hardest to try and gain some sort of foothold, if you will, in Hodeidah, but I don't think that they will be able to do so. It's going to be really tough for them to remain there, even if they have a foothold there.
Okay, let me go to Sami Hamdi. On October 31st, U.S. Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo both called for a ceasefire in Yemen in the next 30 days, as they, I'm quoting them. Why has the U.S. urged a ceasefire after almost 4 years of this aggression? Was it a public relation move in response to the brutal killing of Saudi dissident Jamal Khashoggi by Saudi Arabia?
I think the Khashoggi case has changed a lot of the dynamics with regards to what's going on in Saudi Arabia, what's going on in the Yemen war. It puts a harsh spotlight on Mohammed bin Salman's activities domestically and internationally with regards to the war in Yemen. And the U.S., with Donald Trump providing excuses for Saudi Arabia, the U.S. has found itself in a very difficult position in terms of trying to protect its interests with Saudi Arabia while trying to put on a face that it is part of defending human rights. But I think with regards to Yemen, I think it's much more broader than whether it's the U.S. or with Saudi Arabia. The problem with Yemen is that it's a catch-22. It's a tragedy whichever way you look at it. And the reason why I say this is because both parties are not knights in shining armor. Whether it's Saudi Arabia is not in Yemen to save the internationally recognized government. It's in Yemen because it sees Houthi as an Iranian proxy. At the same time, Houthi launched a coup against a government that was agreed upon by national dialogue, by all the political parties. The Houthis, after the election, secured two seats and believed that the best way to assert themselves was by military force and allying with the former president. Neither of these two sides is a knight in shining armor. And the reality is that the humanitarian crisis will not define what government comes. At the end of the day, when they sit at the table, the Houthis' aim is not to take over Yemen. It is to become a Hezbollah of Yemen, the way Hezbollah is in Lebanon, to be an armed political party that's a strong point.
And I will have to stop you there and tell you, number one, the president resigned twice on TV. Abdullah Mansour Hadi resigned twice on TV. Number two, Ansarullah, not Houthis, because there are more than 200 tribes in Yemen. I'm not going to stop, because there are more than 200 tribes in Yemen fighting within Ansarullah. It's not only Houthis. Three, Ansarullah, whether you call them Houthis or not, I don't care. Ansarullah are part of the Yemeni people. They are the Yemeni people. They have been starving, just like the Yemeni civilians have been starving. They have been protecting the Yemeni people from Saudi airstrikes. If you think that by calling Ansarullah Hezbollah, you are actually insulting them, honey, you are giving them the pride of their history.
Okay, I wasn't insulting them. But in any event, what I meant by Hezbollah, I mean an armed political party that is capable of exerting force. If it can't exert force politically, it can exert force militarily. This is the aim of what the Houthis want
to
achieve.
Of course, against offenders, against foreign invaders, and against occupiers, of course, and this is their right to do so.
But in terms of the other political parties, their biggest angst is this, that a national dialogue of all the parties, Nasiris, Islah, even the Houthis themselves, and the subsequent election where the Houthis
secured only 2 seats. Just 1 week before Saudi Arabia started double striking Yemen, 1 week before the war, there was a national dialogue that was very successful, and they were about to formulate the government because of that national dialogue, but Saudi Arabia did not like that. Why? Because they wanted to put their hand on Yemen, and they thought that Yemen is their backyard, and they should not lose it to internal politics. This is fascism, this is racism, this is religious superiority, and this is plain out Zionism.
Okay, and in terms of this particular point, I think the national dialogue you're referring to was the military council that was suggested by the Houthis that Jamal bin Omar appeared to support, and then the Houthis went along and imprisoned leaders of the Nasserist party and the other parties, which led them to them falling out of the agreement with the Houthis. So the Houthis tried to exert themselves. But as I said, neither party here
agreement. Actually, what happened is Abdurrahman Mansour Hadi was summoned to Saudi Arabia after he was twice resigning on live TV in Yemen, and then he told the world that there was a coup against me and it's against my will, and my resignation was against my will, which is a lie, because if you talk to the people on the ground in Yemen and just tell them one time Abdurrahman Mansour Hadi, you would be hit in the face.
In terms of the biggest issue with Yemen is this, and the catch-22 moving away from how the war actually got to where it is this. If you negotiate with the Houthis while they have Sana'a and you give concessions to the Houthis, there's nothing stopping
Islam. What do you mean
Islam
while they have Sana'a? They are from Sana'a. What do you mean while they have?
Exactly.
Your terminology is mainstream media terminology. We are talking about people who are 14 million people on the edge
point.
Of starvation, 8 million people who are in direct famine, and you say take or retake Sana'a. We are talking about Ansarullah, who are fabric of Yemen.
They belong there, yeah. Exactly. Let me put a question to Sami, this is exactly what you're referring to. Answer this question for me. Historically, Saudi Arabia has made multiple interventions against the Houthis. It backed two civil wars, one in 1962 and the other in 1994. From 2004 to 2010, Saudi Arabia waged six wars against the Houthis. Now, what has made the Saudis make all this aggression against the Houthis? And Houthis belong there. They've been there for 1,000 years.
no one denies that the Houthis are a fabric of Yemeni society, and I think the biggest issue is that in this war is not that it is directed against the Houthis. It is not about a war against the Houthis. For the Saudis, yes, it is. The Saudis believe that Houthis are Iranian proxy. But there is more than one party to this conflict. There are Yemeni parties on the ground. There are Yemenis who believe in the national dialogue. There is Islah. There are Nasserists. There are supporters of Ali Abdullah Saleh. There are southern separatists. There are Yemen is made up, as Marwa said, they're made up of 200 different tribes. They decided on a national dialogue to come to an agreement. Houthi and Ali Abdullah Saleh were the only two parties to declare that this national dialogue is not legitimate, that we don't accept this national dialogue. The way that they expressed themselves was by using force. The issue is not whether Houthis belong in Yemen. Everybody knows they do. They should be part of a government. They are part of the fabric of society.
Can you give me dates and places where the Ansarullah used force against their own people? Give me dates and places where Ansarullah used force against their own people. Ansarullah put out their weaponry when Saudi Arabia started attacking them. And if you're saying that there are people, I agree with you, there are people inside of Yemen that want to start a dialogue. Why don't the Saudis and the Emiratis take their vehicles, their armored vehicles, and their illegal weaponry and leave and let the Yemenis put their dialogue together, put a new constitution maybe, and agree on a new government? Why don't they do that? Why don't they stop the blockade that has killed so far 247,000 children? Why don't they stop the bombardment that has killed 3,000 women and 2,000 children? Why?
I think the biggest issue is this. If you negotiate with the Houthis after they took Jouf and Amran on the pretext of fighting terrorism, when in reality they were trying to get rid of the Islah party alongside Ali Abdullah Saleh, if you negotiate with them after they've used force to force their will, instead of coming to a dialogue and coming to an agreement with everybody else...
You talk about Ali Abdullah Saleh as if he's a hero, as if he is not a traitor to his own country, as if he didn't put his hand with the Emiratis, as if his son is not living in Dubai with hundreds of millions of dollars in the bank accounts.
I didn't say that. But he was Houthi's ally, there's no doubt about this whatsoever. And then he betrayed Houthi at the end, right at the end, and he was killed for it. But with regards to the agreement, this is the issue. In answer to your question with regards to the solution, the problem is this. If you negotiate with Houthi after he's used force, Yemen have tribes that are armed. The Islah in 5 years' time will try to do what Houthi did. They will take a few cities, try to survive a bombing campaign, and force everybody to give them concessions.
That's just
then
a hypothesis. How can you know that? Don't you think that after 4 years wreaking havoc inside of Yemen, of Saudis wreaking havoc and killing Yemenis, don't you think that after 4 years all sides will agree to sit down and talk?
The Houthis reneging on a national dialogue. This is the reality.
How did they renege on peace? Saudi Arabia has been blockading the country for 4 years. They have been bombing, double-tapping. It's a Zionist entity strategy. They learned it from the Zionists. They have been blockading, collective punishment, restriction of movement, no military aid, no medication. They have control over the dialogue. They have famine. They are using famine and disease as a weapon.
I'm not advocating Saudi. If you hear what I said, you go back, you will find that I said Saudi is not in Yemen to save the government.
But you are saying Ansarullah are reneging on peace. They want to keep their weapons because they want to fight their own brothers and sisters of Yemen. How could you possibly say that? Have you ever even spoken to any of the Ansarullah members?
Marwa, listen to me just for a second. I did not say that they want to fight their own people. I said that there was a national dialogue that was agreed. The Houthis didn't like this national dialogue. Even though they agreed initially, they didn't like it. They won two seats later in the elections. The Houthis later attacked Hizb al-Islah in Jouf and Amran. They declared them terrorist organizations. My issue is this. It's not whether it's Houthi. Even
but
if it was
why
Islah
did they
fighting,
attack them?
You
cannot just take the part of history which you like and state it as it is, Sami. You have to talk about history as it is. You have to talk about what the Islahis did and what Al-Ahmar did and what Ali Abdullah Saleh did. You have to put all of that under a certain list and then look at what Ansarullah were actually retaliating against.
You must talk to everybody. The Houthis and the Islah and the STC and the Nasserists, they are all parties of Yemen. They must all be respected as parties of Yemen. But they must respect one another. Houthis can't point a gun at everybody else and say that I am the master of Yemen. Same Islah can't do it. STC can't do it.
I agree with you. That's why Saudi Arabia has to end the blockade and lift its warmongering hand off of Yemen and leave the Yemenis to solve their issues together.
Okay.
All right,
both of our guests, unfortunately, we're out of time. I have to jump in. We're out of time. I should apologize to both of you. Let me thank you. We had Editor-in-Chief with International Interest, Sami Hamdi from London, and Political Analyst Marwa Osman from Beirut. Thank you both for joining us, and thank you for watching this. We'll see you next time.